Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, check us out. Chuck D, Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DOC, the Diggy Diggy motherfucking God.
Yo, what's up? This is your boy, C-Man.
What up, dog? This is E-Shot.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
It's your boy, DJ Paul KOL from 36 Block.
Young Busy Bone.
Vice World.
This your man, Mastermind of Hellraiser.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Red.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross, and you're listening to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
It's the Murder Master Music Show.
You follow what lame stream says, but here it gets rejected. If you wearing tight jeans, don't expect to get respected. I'm from a time where wearing black was always on your checklist. From a time where faggots get checked if they reckless. From a time where if you got too much shine, we snatch your necklace. This real shit here, Illuminati, fuck the industry. We represent the street and they respect our street ministries. Take no shorts and cut the middleman, literally. This hip-hop savior, our birth scenes like nativity. This a place where no one sells out for relevability. And the masses can get a chance to explore more creativity. You gotta be kidding me. If you call that hip-hop, niggas with hot shades and fluorescent flip-flop. We killin' Big Brother, cause we know he watch. You don't like what I'm doing, then you can suck mine. Oh, and you don't murder master music show. It's the 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 Murder Master Music Show.
Episode 324, Murder Master Music Show. What's up, everybody? Man, we got a real special guest tonight. You know what I'm saying? The original Ghetto Boy, Sire Jukebox. You know, we're going to bring him on in a minute. He was with the original lineup. You know what I'm saying? We're going to have him break down the story. You know what I'm saying? His history, as well as what he's got going on in the future. You know what I'm saying? What he's got coming up. This guy's a legend. If you don't know anything about Southern hip-hop, and one of the first guys you need to look at, really, is Sire Jukebox. You need to look at him.
Exactly.
I have about 10 other guys, but he's one of them dudes, man. Let's bring a true pioneer of the South on the air right now. What's up, Sire Jukebox? How you doing, brother?
What's up, fam? How y'all doing? Thank you for having me once again. I appreciate all those accolades. Thanks a lot, man. Thank y'all for what y'all do. And I'm just happy to be here. Happy to be able to share with you.
Man, we appreciate it, man. And you're welcome here anytime, man. But for the people listening that didn't catch any of your other interviews, break down, you know, your history in Houston. You know what I'm saying? When did you first start rapping? And, you know, how did you catch the attention of what Little J was doing?
I was rapping since middle school. I think the first group I was in was the Awesome 3 and Jukebox, because I was, at the time, I was just beatboxing. And I had me and some childhood friends of mine, we had fell in love with hip hop. You know, we heard the Run DMC, LL Cool J, Houdini, the Fat Boys. And it just took a hold of us. We were mesmerized by, you know, none of us, we were not athletes. We were just students. And the thing that set us apart from everybody else was the music. We fell in love with the music. And we would go from different schools at the time, be in everybody's talent show, be everywhere, just try to be as many places as we could. Back then, we were really trying to be known. We were trying to be the best in the city. So any time we heard about somebody who was rapping, we wanted to go see what that shit was all about. You know what I'm saying? Battle rapping. We were into that. You know, we did that thing. And we caught the attention of this guy named Byron McDonald. And Byron McDonald is the guy who introduced us to James Smith at the time. Byron presented himself to us as a manager, but he was a low-key con artist, was trying to play Jay out of some money. But what he did was open the door for Jay to meet us and for us to achieve a dream. And the dream was to make a record. It wasn't even to be, at the time, it wasn't, we wasn't even saying, hey, man, we want to be successful. Nah, we just wanted to make a record. And the record, to us, equated success. You understand?
Yeah.
So
You guys clearly love the music. You know what I'm saying? And those names that you mentioned are the same names that many of us grew up listening to. You know, and I can see a little bit of influence in from Run DMC and from some of them other guys in you. You know what I'm saying? But I could also see your own. You know what I'm saying? When you first started to record, you know what I'm saying, what was the first thing you put out? Was it Car Freak with the Ghetto Boys, or did you do something prior to that?
No, that was the very first recording I made. We might have did some things at home on the tape recorder, things of that nature, but as far as professionally, the first thing we recorded was Car Freak. And a secret that a lot of people don't know is that I missed the Car Freak recording. If you listen to Car Freak, I'm not on it. I missed it. I had something to do for my mother, and she wasn't trying to get at I'm finna go make a record type shit back then. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
I missed the recording. And so the Raheem did extra verses on Car Freak to cover for me. A lot of people don't know that part of the story.
Right. I was about to say, going back to when you was talking about battles, man, like just when y'all was coming up, like we just had
right.
K Reno on here not too
right.
long ago, because K Reno just dropped like 7 in one day. Ain't nobody
man,
done
that,
this shit.
Man,
I can't
K
believe
a,
they not saying nothing.
Man, he a boss.
You know what I'm saying?
He
but,
like, he's a very good friend of mine. I got the most respect in the world for him because he's been grinding in Houston for a minute. He don't get the credibility that he deserves as far as his lyricism
right.
goes. The hard work that he put in, man, I've been knowing K Reno since I started this. You know, he
right.
was one of the kids that I would go and battle against. And
that's what I was about to ask you about. Like, Prez had him on here, man. And we just had him on here, like, what was it, a couple weeks ago, Prez. It wasn't that long ago, maybe about a month ago. And he asked him about a story that he heard about a battle that you and K Reno had. And I think Raheem was with you. And like
right.
he was telling us about y'all coming up to the school, and his teacher, his English teacher, out of all the teachers in the whole school, was his English teacher that let him leave class to go battle y'all at school. Can you tell us about that battle from your point of view? Because we heard it from K Reno's side. I wish we could.
You know,
we had a clip to let you hear what he said, but
I heard. I listened.
What's your
to
take
the,
on that?
I listened to it. Yeah, I listened to the interview, and it's exactly the way he said it. You know, we had been trying to get up there to get at K Reno for a minute because he was a legend already in his hood. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
In the streets, everybody was talking about K Reno, Klondike Cat, Murder One, the dudes he was running with, and we would be hearing that, and we would be like, you know, we finna go look at this shit because we felt like we was the best on the South Side. You know, me,
yeah, y'all finna
rapping
break the boys off, huh?
Me, Rapping Lee, T-Bone, and Shannon, Kid Fresh, we felt like we was the best on the South Side. We felt like it wasn't nothing nobody could do with us. But we kept hearing about K Reno, Klondike Cab, Murder One, SPC, the South Park Coalition. We finna go look at this shit. And we knew where he went to school at. And we didn't give a damn. We were skipping school to go. We finna go battle. We gonna find out what time he go to lunch. We gonna catch him in the lunchroom. We gonna ask.
Yeah.
We gonna be like, "What is it? Well, you know, we here now. I know you done heard about me. I'm Jukebox. I was real cocky, real arrogant back then. You know what I'm saying? Me and Raheem ran a. I don't think there were any more cocky and arrogant teenagers in the whole city. when it came to that hip hop to me and Raheem. So, you know, mm-hmm. K Reno was like, we were never enemies. We always respected one
right.
another in the craft. You know, we were never enemies. I knew K Reno had the juice as far as putting them words together. And he knew I had
mm-hmm.
the juice as far as putting them words together. And we respected that in one another. You know what I'm saying?
That's what's up.
We respected that in one another. We wasn't enemies. It wasn't gonna never get to the point to where I'm gonna kill you or I'm gonna shoot you. No.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna beat your ass up with these words. I'm gonna make you step your word game up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
You have to come back.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna make you step your word game up. And
mm-hmm.
I think one of the first times I heard somebody play with the words, I remember K Reno said something about I stayed on the Virgin Island for one whole week and went from virgin to virgin, now every virgin to freak. The way he put the words together, this was back then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The way he put the
you know
words
what I'm saying?
Together.
Like, slipping
and
shit.
The metaphor, I looked at him, I was like, okay, he mean business. He's serious.
Right.
You know, he's serious. He's serious, man, and I always applaud him for that, man, and every time I see him, it's much love, man. He got a lot going on in the city with the ARC movement they doing, trying to just bring a level of consciousness and get away from this mumble and bumble rapping that's going on. And, he stays relevant because he's hungry, man. He don't feel like he's getting his just due. That's just me saying that. He hasn't told me that, but that's what I see. I don't think he's getting his just due. He don't get enough credit
mm-hmm.
for being the best top three in Houston all time. You know, he's in the best top three in Houston all time.
I think he's in the best top three in the whole fucking game, though.
I can't say that. You know, it's hard to say the top three because he might be in the top two. We know who the other one is. You know, my boy Brad.
Right.
You know, we know who he is. So other than that, I can't think of nobody else that's fucking with him.
I ain't met too many that's fucking with K.
Yeah.
Or even on that same echelon. Like, it's a lot of cats that bubble. You know what I'm saying? Not to take nothing away from nobody either. Not to discredit nobody else because, you know, them high standards and to have those kind of guys on the pillars of that. And then we had Lil Troy on here from Shortstop Records. Like, what was their impact
right.
in your dealings with them when you was coming in the game too?
I never dealt with them. I heard about them, but as far as personally having to deal with them, I heard about them. I never dealt with them. I never had any dealings with them until we started dealing with Brad when the situation
mm-hmm.
was going on with Brad. So I just never had no dealings with Lil Troy. But getting back to one of the best ways to measure success is maintenance. The way you maintain
mm-hmm.
yourself once you get to a certain level. And K Reno
mm-hmm.
has maintained himself at a high level of lyrical fortitude for 30 years plus.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? He ain't.
Mm-hmm.
He has been K Reno, a lyrical beast, for the better part of 30 years. He
yeah.
can stand
yeah.
toe to toe with anybody rapping in the city, in the nation. And
oh,
he'll
yeah.
serve a lot of these boys. He'll serve a lot of these boys. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys, K Reno definitely, you know what I'm saying, shout out to the homie K Reno, but you eventually went over and started recording with Rap-A-Lot Records. Tell us about the conception of Rap-A-Lot and when you guys started to really get things rolling.
I met James through this guy named Byron McDonald in 1986. Late 1985, early 1986, I'm not sure. It might have been like the spring of 1986. We met James. I remember it wasn't cold. It was springtime. And they were doing what they did at the time. It wasn't no Rap-A-Lot. Byron said, I know this guy with money. I'm going to go introduce y'all to him. Y'all can go talk to him. And so I went with Rap and Lee at the time. Me and Rap and Lee was the first ones who met James. And he had a brother who rapped, K-9, Sir Rap-A-Lot. When I found out he had money and he was willing to do whatever this and that and this and that, I would go to him every day. I would be in his face every day. You know, what you gonna do? You know, he said, why you not at school? I've been to school. I got on the bus after school and I came over here because, you know, we need to get this done. And so he was like, well, if you go to school, I'm going to make you a record. This is where it came from. See, the thing about the story that a lot of people, like the Unsung and all these motherfuckers who lied about the story and try to write me out the history, is that if it wasn't for me, and God knows I'm telling the truth, it wouldn't be no rap about mm-hmm. records. Because, like I said, his brother was already there, K-9. He was already mm-hmm. there. He could already rap. He already had a little name in the streets for rapping. But James had he didn't invest in K-9. He didn't invest his money in the music business until me and Raheem showed up. So if Raheem and I never go to Fifth Ward, never meet James, I'll say unequivocally that there would be no Rap-A-Lot Records. If we don't inspire him and come around and get on his nerves and work him the way we worked him back then, there wouldn't be no Rap-A-Lot Records.
Yeah.
Cause
like,
K-9
let him know something
there.
Really happened out of that shit, right?
Exactly. And we was just kids, man. We was 14 and 15 years old. We was just kids, but we loved hip-hop the way I love it now. And we just love the music. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
So, He was a man of his word. James was a man of his word. He put the first studio up. He bought equipment. Our first producer was Mickey Blue. Y'all might have heard of Mickey. And a guy named Daryl Oliver and Mickey Blue was our first producer. They produced Car Freaks, and they had produced some more songs that never got done. But That's just where it came from. That's where it was born on Lolly Street.
Mm-hmm.
It was born at my partner ENC Trahan house. You know what I'm saying? And the first Rap-A-Lot was it wasn't no building. It was in a living room. You know what I'm saying? In my homeboy's living room. So
I was about to say, and then where does Ready Red come in all into this equation when y'all was coming in?
Red was when it really popped off when y'all got Red? Red was originally a member of the Def Four. He had came down with mm-hmm. the Def Four, and Lee had brought him. Rapper Lee had brought him from the Rhinestone tours, and he had did some tracks, and Jay said, you know, we could use this guy, and that's how he became a member of Ghetto Boys. After we met him at the Rhinestone, we saw him spinning a little bit. And Red had the juice back then, man. You know, Red had
Red, man. I love that dude,
man. Yeah, Red developed the initial sound that built Rap-A-Lot. You know, we didn't know where we were gonna get a producer of his caliber from, who knew hip hop the way he did, who knew sampling the way he did, who had the musical archive that Red had. And once again, Red was one of the bricks that built Rap-A-Lot that deserves much more credit than he gets, man. Much more credit than he gets. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love Vito and Mike Dean and all the other producers they had over the years, but I'm going to tell you this. There's no other producer on that label that I think could ever touch Red, because he gave, like Max said, that signature sound. You know what I'm saying? That's what. Whenever I think of the Ghetto Boys, man, I think of those breaks and those scratches and the samples and the, you know what I'm saying? Not just the lyrics that y'all did. I also think of that too. So, you know, shout out to Ready Red. Plus, he influenced so many people.
Yeah, Red was a beast. Red would be up days and days on end making beats, man, and making sure everything was that the sound was right, that it was raw. He gave it that raw element. A lot of these guys, Mike Dean, Vito, they were around, but Red, like I said, Red was the cornerstone. And I'm not taking nothing from none of those guys. You know, I applaud Mike on the success that he's having right now. He's having phenomenal success. Mike Dean is. He hooked up with Kanye Click, and he's being best in what he's doing, and I'm not sure what Beto's doing right now, but it's a lot of people, you know, a lot of branches, the fruit, you know, they bearing seed. It's a rap a lot tree, and planted a lot of seeds, and some have grown and some have died.
You know? Right.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to take this time to say rest in peace to Mr. 3-2.
Exactly.
Huge loss.
Yeah, exactly, man. It was a very big loss. A very big loss to the city. 3-2 meant a lot to hip hop in Houston. And the way he went out was a tragedy. And that just speaks to the way a lot of guys like DJ Screw, Pimp C, 3-2. You know, you have to tell yourself, you have to release yourself of things that are not conducive to life, to giving, to bringing life. You know, you can't. I never did drugs in my life. I just never saw the benefit of drug use. You know what I'm saying? I don't smoke marijuana, and I'm not trying to crucify these guys. I'm just saying that for the children, because the influence of drugs and loose sex and promiscuity. That's all hip hop is about today. You know, if you listen to the music today, there is no one out there other than Kendrick who in the mainstream who is uplifting, picking people up. You understand what I'm saying? He's the only one that I know of. And so that I'm aware of, and I listen to a lot of music, but the influence of drugs and woman abuse and the downgrading of people of all colors, hip hop is not the vessel that it was back then. You know, you got these clowns like Lil Yachty disrespecting everything and everybody, and he can't hold a note with a 2-year-old. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He ain't got a bitch ass thing, but you on mainstream radio on every big radio station with this bullshit music.
Yeah.
That they feeding the people, and it's up to guys like you all, to keep hip hop relevant, to keep it strong. You know, because you do what you do.
Appreciate that, man.
It still has life. You feel me?
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Just want to make sure guys like yourself get to tell your story because. You know, like I said in the opening of the show, you're such a huge part of the foundation of the South. You know, you're right there with guys like Brother Marquise and Fresh Kid Ice and, you know, guys that shaped, you know what I'm saying, the whole culture of the South in the rap music industry. I wanted to ask you this, Mark. No,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I wanted to ask you this, you know what I'm saying, after Making Trouble, you know what I'm saying? What happened with the group? Because Red told us, we had Red on the show not too long ago, that you guys went, I believe it was to Cali for a meeting, for the hip-hop meeting and whatnot. And then you guys came back, and that's when the lineup changed. What occurred at that meeting, and what made you guys change?
We had, before going to California, we had completed what I believe was our best work. It wasn't influenced. We were given some creative liberty. It was a true hip hop album, and the name of it was "Ghetto Boys Just Made a Jump in the Heights." And it was I believe it was our best work. That it was gonna go down if it had been released as one of the Ghetto Boys' best albums at the time. And so we were introduced to Michael Harris, Harry O. I know you all know who he is. We were introduced to Mike, and James went to. We all went to California, and they had a meeting. And when we came back, the nature of the Ghetto Boys, the way we did things. James didn't want to. He wanted it to be more gangster.
Well,
He wanted
basically
to be
after
happy.
The meeting with Harry O, he wanted to be more gangster.
I heard from a source, I'm not gonna say a name, that that James was afraid that Harry O was gonna try to take the Ghetto Boys from him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to he took us from California quickly after that initial meeting with Harry. After that, no, it was like it wasn't the initial meeting because we had seen Harry a few times. But after that last or final time with us seeing Harry, we never saw him again. And the lineup and his attitude about the after we didn't do, after they didn't put out Just Made a Jump in the Hype, it discouraged a lot of us. It discouraged Johnny, so he wanted to go solo. Raheem had already gone solo on his own. And so me and Red was the last man standing. And they brought in Willie D. Bill was still around. He was just dancing still at the time. And we had brought in Scarface. And we were at James Ranch. He had a ranch in Prairie View right outside of Houston. He had a studio at the ranch. And we were working on new music. We had just finished, like, the same time we were doing the Just Made a Jump in the Hype album, Willie D was doing his Controversy album. If you listen to Willie D's Controversy album, the original cut, I'm on a couple of the songs. But when they redid it, they took me off the songs, and Bill is on the songs. But if you listen to the original, I'm on the songs. So when we went to the ranch, it had came some kind of way that they were trying to get Willie D to write for me. Now, looking at this thing in retrospect and in hindsight, one of the worst decisions I ever made in my life was I walked away from Ghetto Boys.
Mm.
I say that because I walked away from this thing that I started as a kid. I walked away from it because I felt like at the time it was being taken from me. I think about if I had not walked away from Ghetto Boys, maybe I wouldn't have spent 14 years of my life in prison. Because shortly after I left the Ghetto Boys in 1989, no less than a year later, I had caught a murder case and went to the penitentiary. This just me being brutally honest. If I don't walk away from the Ghetto Boys, maybe I don't go to prison. My children are in a better position than I would ever have been in my life. You know what I'm saying? So I walked away from it because I didn't agree with, I'm an MC. I've always been an MC. They were trying to get Willie D to write for me, and I disagreed with this vehemently. And I told James at the time at his house, we had did a few songs. We had did the Talking Loud, Saying Nothing. We had did a few of the songs on that Ghetto Boy album. We had did them already. And I was like, hey, man, this ain't in my heart no more. I ain't feeling this. And he was like, I really disappointed him. I really disappointed him. Because like I said, I was there first. And I believe he wanted me to be there always. Because I was there first. And I walked away from it because I wasn't finna let nobody else write for me. I felt like it was disrespectful to the craft.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Do you feel like they was having Willie D write for you so you couldn't own the publishing on what you was writing, or
was they just having him write because they wanted to
have you sound different than what you really was?
Who other than James, who owns it?
Yeah.
Other than James, who owns it? So I can't make that argument. We didn't understand the magnitude of that back then, of the ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I'm going to say I didn't. I didn't understand.
So you could have been on Griffin on that other level. You were very close to being a part of that album.
Yes.
Would it still consist of Bushwick? And do you think they put Bushwick in there because you left? Or how would
I know
it
they
been?
Did. I know they did. The Ghetto Boys would have been me, Scarface, and Willie D.
I walked away from that.
I walked away from that. Red was still the DJ. Red will tell you the same thing.
I think Red did tell us that.
The Ghetto Boys would have been me, Scarface, and Willie D. Bill would have still been dancing. Bill didn't start rapping.
Yep, that's what he told us.
Until I left.
I think Red did tell us that, Prayer. Maybe he didn't say it on the show, but I think he did tell me that before. That's what the lineup would have been.
It would have been me, Brad, and Willie. And like I said, it was one of the
that
hardest.
That was a cold-ass lineup, too. And, with B.O., though, too. All four of y'all. They
yeah,
couldn't let all four of y'all rock that shit.
That I ever made in my life, I walked away from the Ghetto Boys, and I have regret. I don't have a lot of regrets, and I have regrets about that. I have regrets about that because these guys were my friends. You know, James was my friend. James was my friend. Red was my friend. Willie D, Bushwick, Brad. These guys were my friends, but. It had to becoming more of a business and less of a friendship. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know, because I felt like back then, and I still feel like it today, that I got 16 balls for anybody on the planet. You know, that's just
I feel you too, man.
That's just the
I'll be the same way. So, and I never release music, but I still eat these young motherfuckers up, man, like if they really want it.
If you want it, you can get it. You know, you definitely can get it. So, I wasn't comfortable with nobody writing for me, and so I walked away from that. And
especially at that part, because you know it was all about an MC honing his own skills, and you were already established. Why would you need a writer? You know what I mean?
If you ask. Raheem or anybody at the time, Raheem don't get the credit he deserved in Houston for what he
brought. Yeah, Raheem cold too. Right.
I could hold my own against anybody. I could hold my own. It was A&M. I could hold my own against anybody. So
and
I don't know if I wasn't. I don't know if I wasn't
with Jay since you left the Ghetto Boys.
When I came home from prison. I came home in 2002. I didn't immediately go to Rap-A-Lot because I didn't want to stand on nobody, but I couldn't find a job. And I went to Rap-A-Lot. Jay gave me a job, not as an artist, but I was working in the office. And things didn't go well. I'm going to say at one time, James was my very best friend, James Prince. He was my very best friend, and he took care of me. He, without him, it's a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have seen in life, a certain quality of life I never would have been exposed to. But things were just not as right as they should have been. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to say this, and... You can't be in business for 30 years, you know, and I don't know if y'all saw on Scarface, his Brad, his personal page on Facebook, but he sold 10 million records. All his records together, he done sold 10 million records. This is like in the last couple of days, he had achieved this. How much money is 10 million records for the, how much money is 10 million records for the artist? Why he can't get a dollar a record? You can't be in business for 30 years and don't produce no millionaires, and you the only millionaire that came out of the equation? You can't be in business 30 years and don't produce no millionaires. It's something wrong. The math ain't right. You know what I'm saying? You have to be fair to somebody. You have to be everybody don't want no trinket. Everybody don't want no Rap-A-Lot necklace. Everybody don't want no Rap-A-Lot watch. Everybody don't want no car that's been driven. Some people just give them their money and let them do what they want. Let them achieve their own goals. Let them do what they want to do. Let them blaze their own trail with their own money. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I know exactly what you're saying. Like it seemed like that in a lot of situations when it's dealing with this business, especially in the music game. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot of people that don't get the credit. And they don't get the money. So, like, what's the fame without the fortune? Fuck the fame. Like, I don't care if they don't talk about me all the time. As long as you compensate me for the work that I put in, and if you're not going to pay me, you at least better pay homage to where the fuck you got it from. Because the money don't always mean everything. Like that kid to know that you was the originator of a lot of this shit, that's worth more than gold sometimes.
To me, that is. Don't try to write
that's just real shit.
Or make it seem like what I did was insignificant. No, motherfucker. Without me, this shit wouldn't be. Tell that part of the story. Tell the part of the story how this shit came. Because you came into a house that was already built. Now, don't get me wrong. I have nothing against none of the MCs that ever rapped for Ghetto Boys. My gripe is with the business of it. You know what I'm saying? With the business of it.
I always thought that would be dope. I wish we could.
But the egos. Some people are gonna have egos are gonna be so big to where they feel like they deserve more than everybody else. But I'm not worried about that because I'm not worried about that.
We got a couple of them. Bring on the first one's long distance from France. I'm gonna bring him on. It's Sinister. How you doing, Sin?
Hi, Scott. Hi, MJ. Hi, Sergeant Box. Yes, Sinister from France. Yes. Yeah, I got a question. Tell us about your track. I run this, and you did it in 1988. And also, Assassin Making Trouble album, who inspired a lot of hardcore rappers after, especially this song.
He said, solo song, I Run This.
You want to ask me about I Run This? I Run This was just, it was a hip hop track, and it was just us bragging on who we were, sucker MCs at the time. You know what I'm saying? It was just a hip-hop track. You might not be a sucker, but I Run This hit it. It was a bad break that Red had put together. And it was just letting people know that we were there. You know, we here now. Here we are. And what was the other part of the question?
About the song Assassin, yes. You inspired a lot of hardcore rappers after this song.
The song Assassin.
Fired hardcore rappers.
Oh, we're Assassin was Johnny C's baby.
Yeah.
And it was something outside of his comfort zone because he wasn't really a horrorcore or gangster rapper. He was just a real hip hop artist. One of the best lyricists I ever known was Johnny. And Johnny, it was something I went home to my mom's house one day. And when I came back the next day, he and Red had done Assassins, and it was I loved it, and I didn't want to touch it. I wanted it to stay the way that it was, and I didn't have no grief about it. You know what I'm saying? It was their thing. They had put it together overnight. They had worked all night, and when I came, they didn't even look like they was tired. They was inspired, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. This track definitely. I never heard nothing like it at that time. And when I first heard it, I was like, "Oh man, this is great! This is a horror flick on a song." But then I heard Nip, and I was like, "Oh my God! Now this guy is really nuts." This guy, you know, shout out to Gangsta Nip.
Shout out to Gangsta Nip.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a good
dude right there. But you guys, okay? The lineup changes now. Red was telling us about this album too. And it's still tucked away, never been released. Who does Jay still own the masters to that, or is that something that
I'm sure Jay does own the masters. But Red says that Johnny C has the whole album, the masters and all, and he just won't let him go. Why he won't let him go, I don't know why. But I think it would be good to like release them and just let people know that this is what it was. This is, you know, it would just be fulfilling to just let people hear it. Because at the time, in 1988, 89, I think it would have been a damn good hip hop album. I know it would have.
Because I heard the song that Red was talking about too. I remember buying this at Walmart, like
fucking 30 years ago because it didn't have explicit lyrics. It was called Gangster Rap. It was a compilation. And
yeah, that Must Be the Music.
Must Be the Music. Have you? I mean, I heard that song. Was that the direction that you were going in, and was that track supposed to be on this album?
Yes. That track, Hip Hop Must Be the Music, it wasn't even the lead single off the album. I don't know what went into them choosing that song, but okay, they chose that one. But the lead single was going to be Just Made a Jump in the Hype. Red had taken a sample from Star Wars, where Darth Vader was talking to his master or whatever, the force, the dark side of the force. And Darth Vader had said in the line, he said, "My lord, they have just made a jump in the hyperspace." And Red took the "just made a jump in the hype" and made a dope as ghetto boys just made a jump in the hype. Ha ha, just made a jump in the hype. And it was just awesome. It
wow.
was just awesome.
Man, we got to awesome. Hear that. We got to hear that because we had the homie Crazy
awesome.
E on the show, who was a member of NWA in the early days, and he actually leaked 30-second clip of an unreleased Easy E song from 87. And to hear that shit is just mind-blowing. You know what I mean? Just, it's like, wow, I got to hear that fucking album, man.
Yeah, it's a whole album. It's like maybe 12 songs.
Man. Well, hey, we got another caller. It's from your neck of the woods, 281, Houston, Texas. How you doing?
Okay.
Yo, what's up, Cy Jukebox?
What's going on? Who I'm talking to?
You already know. You talk to me every morning. It's Roderick.
Who?
Roderick.
Hey, what's up, Rod Hurry? What's going on, Rod?
What's up, Prince? What's up, Matt?
What's good with it, man?
What it do? Man, oh, man. Cy Jukebox, man. I want to ask you one thing, man. I want to ask you something. I noticed, like, on Making Trouble, I noticed the ghetto boys, they always have this thing about snitches and not the G-code. You know, if y'all go back to Making Trouble, they're talking about snitches. Then you go to the foundation, they're talking about the G-code. So they always have, like, the street, like we're going to rep it for the streets. We don't like snitches. And if you tell, and we don't tell because we got, you know, the G-code.
Right.
So, yeah, I kind of figured that out.
What's the question?
Oh, I'm talking about that. The question is, like, how did you feel about, like, I mean, no. My question is, like, when you was writing your verses, did you feed off of Johnny C? Did his energy enter you and make you, like, a better MC? And vice versa?
We always tried to feed off one another. We just was, most of the time when we did songs, we were right there together. You know, Red was playing the beat. On Making Trouble, Making Trouble was heavily influenced by James. We didn't have a lot of creative liberty. And so a lot of the stuff that we said was a reflection of what he told us to say.
Red told me that exact same thing.
Yeah, so the Making Trouble album was just a reflection of, because James was a real street dude back then. I don't know if, you know, if y'all are aware of that, but he was he was he a legend in the streets in Fifth Ward in Houston. So a lot of the stuff that we said on Making Trouble was just a reflection of what he had influenced or led us to say, told us to say.
About Scarface too, when he was making the first Scarface song, he said he rapped pretty much about Troy's life. At the time. Wow, that's interesting. But you guys, I mean, you, that lineup, you know what I'm saying? You guys got to go on tour with the Fat Boys and Salt and Pepper, and you guys really got that Ghetto Boys whole movement going. You know what I'm saying? In the hyperspace, you just said. And like you said before, if it wasn't for you, and definitely Red, of course, definitely wouldn't be, you know what I'm saying?
As far as those early tours go, I believe that's why James allowed Michael Harris in because James really didn't know a lot of people in the music business, and Michael Harris already had shows on Broadway. I don't know if y'all know that or not. You know, he one of Denzel Washington's first plays on Broadway.
I heard about that.
Stage plays
mm-hmm.
was funded by Michael Harris. So Mike was already making moves, and Mike was the reason that we were able to get on those early tours with the Fat Boys and Salt and Pepper and things of that nature. You know, Mike opened those doors for us.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
You know, and I heard
that somewhere else. Maybe I seen on a documentary or somebody else told us, but they said that Harry O had was producing like Broadway plays that traveled from city to city.
He was.
And promoted like Cameo and some of the early funk groups. And
yeah, he was all. Mike was already.
People don't remember that too. That's got a lot to do with the hip hop scene too. Is like it's a lot of early stuff that set the stage for the hip hop guys to come in. You know what I'm saying? Like me and Prez, we much younger than you, but we not too much younger than you, so we almost kind of remember it. And I remember back in some of them early days, like with them Ghetto Boys albums, like we wasn't allowed to listen to that shit for real.
Mm-hmm.
We had to sneak to get certain shit.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like your cousin be like, I'm gonna let you listen to it, but you better not go back in the other room and sing this shit.
Right.
You know, so I remember them days, man. Like I'm starting to remember them more now than I did back then, but I remember that shit. And I just feel mm-hmm. like y'all don't get enough credit, like you said with Red. Like, Red don't get enough credit. Mr. Mix with the 2 Live Crew, they don't get enough credit for what they really did, and it's important for y'all to come on and tell y'all stories. So I'm always salute, man. I appreciate it with you taking your time out to talk with us. You know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate y'all having me. I tell him that all the time, man. You know, I appreciate y'all having me, having this avenue set up where brothers like myself can come on and share some history with the young guys and share some stories that people may not be aware of, and just thank you for having us. But the story's not over. It's not over. It's still being written.
It's not over because you guys, you're still here, and I know you got the talent. When are we going to hear a jukebox record or possibly a first lineup GB reunion? Anything in the works like that, Box?
We Red and I are very open to that. We've been trying to talk to Johnny about it. Johnny's going through some things, and so we need to let him go through what he's going through. We don't want to pressure him with this thing. Because this thing, it hurts some of us more than it does others. It affected some of us differently. And
yeah.
Johnny, it affected Johnny. Some things went on when I was in prison that if Johnny comes on, he can tell y'all about them. But it affected him in ways that I wasn't affected. You understand? Some things happened that you know, Johnny can tell you. But as far as me, I work for this, I'm a partner in this company called Majestic Management. And I discovered this young kid from Georgia named Mannequin Fly. And I'm working with him. And I believe, as far as I'm concerned, that I'm going to do a couple of features off an album that he's working on right now. I know I am.
Oh, dope.
And,
dope. So we're going to get to hear some bars from Bach. Hell
yeah. There's some music that I sent you, Prez, a couple of the songs that we're working on. And this is the kid, and he's raw. He's from a small town in southern Georgia, man, but he has so much potential. And he's not a mumble rapper. You know, hip-hop, like everything else, it grows, and it goes through these phases, and it goes through these changes. It's like a car, or all the cars ain't the same. You ain't gonna the cars in the 1980s are not the same as the cars right now. TV shows are different. Hip hop is evolving, but it has devolved also in the evolution. It has gone through a de-evolution. It has gone through a downgrade, and so we need somebody who, along with brothers like J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar, who are willing to uphold the mantle of hip hop. And I believe that this kid, Mannequin Fly, is one of those guys who can be relevant to today's audience without sacrificing hip hop. In the same vein as a J. Cole or a Kendrick Lamar. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, can you hear us? Yeah,
I can hear you now.
Yeah. Sometimes it be lagging off, man. Blog talk, there you go with the shit. Blog talk with the shit. Sometimes I did it to us other night on you. You know what I'm saying? That shit was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
We had an ice storm. The only thing about saying, I'm in St. Louis right now. It went from 2 degrees yesterday to 45 today. Something ain't right with that shit. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. But I'm working with this kid, Mannequin Fly, and we just working on some heat, man, God works things out in his own way, in his own time. I just keep plugging every day. I just keep doing my part. You know what I'm saying? And that's all we can do. We just keep doing our part. That's it.
Right.
Just like y'all do y'all's part, I can just keep doing my part. And I don't believe that my passion for this music, it can't be extinguished. I got to get this shit out of me.
Right.
That's it.
You got a lot to tell, man. You got and since K Reno just dropped 7 albums on one day, and we've been waiting for you for a little while. We need you to drop 20 albums on one day. So
K-Reno and I.
I'm glad it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. It'll be real. K-Reno and I, the last time I saw him, a couple of months ago, we talked about doing some music. He and I, which I believe we need to get done. You know.
Hell yeah.
So 2017. And I'm not one who waits on years and dates and things of that nature. If the shit happened tomorrow, let's do it tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? I'm not waiting on the new year for nothing to happen. Let's just get it done. And so we working on some things, and hopefully they'll come to fruition very soon. And you'll be the first one to know about it on some exclusive type shit.
On some exclusive
type shit. You know, whenever I get the music, I'll be like, okay, play this song. Play that song. You know,
I appreciate that, man, because it's a huge honor to be able to do that. You know what I'm saying? We always appreciate when people do that. We got Gangsta Nip getting ready to do that on Christmas, man. He's got a couple tracks we're going to debut. So, you know what I'm saying? Definitely huge, man. Coming up, Making Trouble, did it drop in 88 or 87?
It dropped in early 88.
Early 80s. So this is right around the time of, you know, Straight Outta Compton, Easy Does It. They were blowing up in Compton, and you guys were...
Trouble came out before the NWA out. I know it came out before that.
It came out later in the year, I believe. You guys came out earlier in the year. So, yeah, man, that's crazy because that really... You know, what if all the attention was shifted on you guys? What if, like, the song Assassins... People would have been like, oh, man, this is so vile, this, and that. It could have easily been you guys blowing up.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
you know, I believe, you know,
did,
if
though.
You,
you
if
did
you
blow
see
up
those,
the way because, you know, you set the foundation.
You know, if you look at what those guys, NWA did, they were unmatched in what they did. You know, they had a lot of creative liberty, the creative liberty that we didn't have. They didn't, you know, all of them were on the same page and vibe early, at least early on. And that's why they were so successful. early on. And that's why their first album was one of the best first albums that any group has ever put out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, they brought a lot to the table. They brought a lot to the game. But I believe our story is just as intriguing, interesting as theirs. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people don't know the Ghetto Boys story.
Right.
We need to tell the Ghetto Boys story. We need to tell the Ghetto Boys story.
Yeah, they sure do.
I think it would be a good story to tell.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it would be, there'd be a lot more to it than just what was going on in Compton. But, we had Born Twice on the show. You were talking about Death Four. He was telling,
right.
Or maybe he was, I don't know, if he, yeah, he was with Death Four, was he, or was he with Royal Flush?
Royal Flush.
Yeah, he was talking about the incident with him and Raheem. And how they were able, after all that, to become friends. You know?
Yeah, him and Raheem was out. Him and Raheem was out to try to kill each other at one time.
Yeah.
You know, but when all this was going on, Raheem had to tell me this. When I came home, you know, I learned about all this when I came home. So it's a lot of stuff that went on between 1990 and 2002 that I didn't know about. You know, because I didn't know about it firsthand because I was in prison. You know, I was trying to keep all my teeth in my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just real.
Yeah. Well, hell of a show. Always an honor to have you on. People want to get at you for verses or shows or anything like that at all. So what's the best way they can answer?
They can always email me, Original Ghetto Boy at iCloud, you know, spell everything out the right way. Original Ghetto with the GHETTOBOY at iCloud.com. You can always reach me like that. And be on the lookout for this young kid, Mannequin Fly, from Southern Georgia. We're going to shoot a couple of videos for him the second week of January. We're going to bring him to the city and shoot a couple of videos for him. Just be on the lookout for us. It's time again. This door is opening one more time, and we're going to take advantage of this opportunity. And all them young artists out there, you know, don't ride the wave. Create the wave.
Yeah,
don't ride
exactly.
The wave. Don't ride the wave. Create the wave. You don't have to live in anyone's shadow. It's okay to be an individual. It's okay to be yourself. You don't have to do what these young guys are doing out there, disrespecting the craft, disrespecting the history of the game. You ain't got to do all that. Just
that's
be yourself. Tough. Respect the craft. And if you're good, the money gonna come. If you're good, the money gonna come. You know, it's okay to make money, but respect the craft. You know what I'm saying? It's okay to be a lyricist. It's all right. It's okay. You know what I'm saying? Because that mumbo jumbo shit, it ain't gonna last but just a little while. You know, it's gonna get back to can you put those words together? Can you rock them metaphors and similes? You know what I'm saying? Can you put them words together? That's, you know, hip hop. It needs a resurgence, and it's gonna take young guys, like I said, like Kendrick, J. Cole, people like that to bring it on. I keep mentioning them guys because I listen to them, and I got a lot of love for them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
It's only a few of them trying to go against the grain. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I've been telling people, me and Prez been hearing good music for the last 4 or 5 years, man, because we stick to the underground, and it feel like if you look into the mainstream to really get some substance, then you already lost. Like, yeah, we should be looking to what we seeing right in front of us to get guidance, but it's really teaching other people and teaching their kids that you got to dig a little deeper than what the fuck they just putting in your
exactly.
face. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. You know, and you have to respect a kid like J. Cole who done put out two phenomenal albums, and he don't let nobody rock his shit but him. You know, J. Cole don't have no bunch of features. Ain't nobody on his shit. You got
right.
to respect the shit
you,
out of that.
You
got
you know
to,
you know
where
them features should be coming from? The features should be coming from cats like y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
they need to bridge the gap. This is the only genre of music that they the bridge the gap from the old to the young. It's like if you feel if they look at you like you older, you played out. Like, why is it like that though? Where's the disconnect from an original ghetto boy from a J. Cole being like, man, I remember when my dad used to listen to him and he still make music. I need to have him on my album. That's what
I
see.
And that, okay, so that's my responsibility to make myself available to let him know, hey, man, I'm still
exactly.
here. And it ain't no downgrade. Yeah. It ain't no downgrade. So I'm going to put out something to let them youngsters know. You know?
Because, in all respect, like a Lil Yachty don't have to be like a Lil Yachty if he had the right motherfuckers around him showing him his way. A lot of these motherfuckers don't know, and they come from impoverished areas to where somebody telling them it's okay for you to be a fucking idiot, and we just going to give you some money. You're going to get rewarded for them. They're going to reward them at a younger age. So the most of the kids think that they're going to be able to get a Lil Yachty deal. They're not finna get shit. And they still going to be out here looking like idiots. You see what
yeah.
I'm saying? Or doing idiot
yeah.
shit. Lil Yachty can do some dumb shit, and he can be out of it because he's been put in that position, but everybody can't do it. It ain't like when we was coming up, we had y'all. We had a Tupac. Like, for instance, Tupac just got inducted into the Hall of Fame. I asked people on Facebook today to tell me what was their thoughts on it. Some people was ecstatic about it, and some people was like, who is the Hall of Fame to dictate who we should celebrate in our culture? You should be celebrated just as much as a Tupac. Y'all
all
paved it. The way. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
all
just real shit.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, people should know about Spice One. If you know about Tupac, you got to know about Spice One.
Yeah,
exactly.
How you know Tupac and you don't know Spice One?
Exactly.
To me, that means you really don't know Pac. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know that shit. They don't. If somebody say the Ghetto Boys and they don't speak your name, they don't know about the Ghetto Boys. That's
exactly.
just facts. You see what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Exactly.
Like, that don't mean they gotta like all your songs as opposed to you part of that. You the start of that. So
exactly.
It's a real big disconnect from the younger generation to us. Like, they don't have to be what we call them swaggers. But the only reason why they swaggers is because when nobody checking them. And the OGs that wanted to check them, they thought they was gonna get phased out, so they co-signed that shit. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of OGs in this game co-signing that shit too. When Ice-T checked Soulja Boy on that shit, everybody said Ice-T was bullying him. But no, he was just checking him. That's all he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And look at Soulja Boy now. Look at him now. They finna treat him like he trash now. They say he going crazy. He on probation on Instagram with guns and all that shit. Like, why our young kid? Our young entertainers that's leading our next generation, meaning my kids, your kids, your grandkids, you know what I'm saying, your nieces, your nephews, why are they telling them that they crazy? Because they let them do whatever. Nobody checked them. It's time to check these motherfuckers again, man. It's time to check that ass. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
That's some real 100%. Shit.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
We got to check them, but we got to educate them too. You know what I'm saying? The ones that are willing to learn. You know what I'm saying? Bring them in, show them the good stuff. You know, let them know what
they need
there.
To know the history.
And
they
got to
pay homage because without the history, they'll never humble themselves. If you don't know
check.
Where you come from, you'll never be able to humble yourself. None of them can humble
themselves.
There are
some willing to learn. There are some willing to listen.
Oh yeah,
to I
don't say all of them like that.
To some of the music I grew up off of, and they've told me, man, rap was so much better when you were growing up. I was like, I know. I fucking know, man. That's why I'm getting this shit. But, man, I want to thank you again, Box. Man, huge honor to have you on the show. Before we go, though, is there anything you want to say? Any shout-outs or anything? Or?
No, I just want to always shout-out to the Ghetto Boy family. I always want to shout-out to, you know, Red, Johnny, Bushwick Bill, Big Mike, Raheem, K-9. Scarface, Willie D, you know, shout out to them boys, man. If you're working, keep working. All you young artists out there, you know, make a name for yourself. Like I just said, don't ride the waves. I want to shout out to all the independent radio stations, the internet radio stations, the online stations who still show hip-hop love, who are not caught up in this mainstream BS where hip-hop is dying on the mainstream, who are not controlled, who have some independence and can allow people to breathe in the music. People like you guys, we appreciate what y'all do. And just thank you for what you do, and thank you for having me. You know,
oh, yeah.
Shout out to my boy. Shout out to my boy Mannequin Fly. I'm telling you, he's gonna be a household name.
Man, well, we look forward to great things from him as well as yourself, and we look forward to having you back on here, 2017, which is just a few days away, man. What happened to this year? This went by real fast.
It just flew.
Oh yeah,
it just flew
oh,
by.
Oh yeah, man. Well, hey, man, you take care of yourself, Box. Thanks again for coming on the show, and we'll definitely stay in touch, brother.
Thank you.
Man, shout out to the homie Shire Jukebox, you know what I'm saying? Original Ghetto Boy. Man, hell of a show, Mac. Hell of a show.
For a long time we thought it was Sir Jukebox. He even said that he was like, I don't know why these motherfuckers all these years kept calling me Sir Jukebox.
I don't know.
Sire Jukebox it is.
Yeah, the only time I ever remember hearing Sire was in the King of Rock. You know, DMC. So,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But that's dope, man. Hell of an interview. You know what I'm saying? Always real humble. You know what I'm saying? Individual. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with DJ Ready Red. I hope we can have Prince Johnny C on in the future. That would be dope. I'd love to hear his story as well. You know, but clearly Rap-A-Lot, you know what I'm saying, made a huge impact on the music industry. And, this man we had on the show tonight was a huge, huge, huge part of that. Can't stress that enough. And those of you that think you know the history of Rap-A-Lot and the Ghetto Boys, and you don't mention him, you don't really know the history. So
yeah, you don't know that shit, man.
Go back and listen to the music. You know what I'm saying? And you know what? Know who did what? Man, know who the contributors were. You know, sometimes it's just the guy on the cover or the guy has his name on the back, real, real big bold letters that gets all the credit, when in actuality, there's other key players involved in the whole situation. So, you know, make sure everybody gets credit, man, because they deserve that shit. You know, that's real talk. But, man, we got two shows lined up, Saturday and Sunday, you know what I'm saying, you and Velvet. On the ground Saturday night. You gotta go to
Christmas Eve, bitches.
So tune into that, 9 p.m. Central, UGSForLife.com. Then Sunday, Christmas Day, I don't celebrate Christmas. I'm not big into the holidays like I was, but for those of you that are not celebrating, join, you know what I'm saying, us for Gangsta Nibs Holiday Horrorcore Show. He's going to be, we're going to be playing all three chapters of The Landlord. You know what I'm saying? He made a trilogy out of this song where he's the landlord of, he calls himself the landlord of Horrorcore pretty much, and he's going around from apartment to apartment symbolizing from rapper to rapper, you know, collecting rent, meaning I want homage, you know.
Right, pay my homage.
Pay my respects, you know what I'm saying? If you, and that's the way it should be. You know, you gotta pay respects to those before you, those who made it possible for you to do what you do. But, man, tonight was a great show. I look forward to Saturday with you and Bell. I look forward to Sunday. And then after that.
Oh, motherfuckers. Merry Malcolm Xmas.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
prayers. And on the real, though, on some hip-hop shit, whether they like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or not, man, shouts out to Tupac for making it in that motherfucker, man. So at least motherfuckers from that avenue will know. Yeah, man, you know what I'm saying? Like some people were talking shit, whether they say, oh, well, see what it is, he the first individual soloist to be in from the hip-hop genre.
How many rappers have a curriculum about them being taught in school, about their poetry, about the speech?
Exactly, like I said.
You know,
it's a lot of shit. It's a lot of shit that go with Pac.
You know what I'm saying?
So I seen like Chuck D and them was like, they were saying, well, LL Cool J should have been in first if you're going to put a solo. Well, who gives a fuck, man? Like, really? Because Tupac, he might have had a little beef with LL at one time, but he shot all them dudes out in songs. It was hip hop, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, who gives a fuck who was the first one in?
But. Come on,
like,
Tupac,
don't put Vanilla. right, don't put Vanilla Ice in before you put Tupac in. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah. Don't
whoever
in
gets
there,
in, like, if Rakim had got in first as the first solo artist, so what is fucking Rakim, man? Like, celebrate all that shit. People always got something to say. People always got something to complain about. Like, celebrate the people, like, because
yeah,
the show didn't fucking celebrate him when he was here. Yeah, they didn't celebrate him when he was here. So if he dead and gone, at least celebrate him now. Pac made it in. And if your kids ask you who Pac is, if you was a real Pac fan, like if a kid asked me about Pac right now, I feel like I'm the best person they would have came to ask about Pac. Because I love Pac like that too. I feel like I can give you a history on Pac. So,
well,
kids, if you want to ask me about Pac,
you know, rest in peace, Pac. But also, on this day in 2013, we lost Lord Infamous, 3-6 Mafia, rest in peace to Lord Infamous. He was on this show a year prior to that telling us about his previous life-death experience. So, I mean, a year later, almost to the day the man dies, it still creeps me out. Then a year after that, in 2014,
TNT.
He not has passed away.
Yeah.
On
the same day.
Rest in peace to them. Both of them contributed a lot to the game, too. You know, rest in peace to Lord 3-2. A lot of guys, been, man, you know, just losing their lives, man, this year of rap music. Lost a lot of people.
Right.
So, you know, saying shout out to, everybody that, you know, like you were talking about with Tupac.
Yeah.
It's a must he got in there, man. How are you going to
Even with Tupac getting in there, Big Psych just passed away. You know what I'm saying?
Big
like,
Psych, yeah, right? I can't believe it's not a big rest. He's a Big Psych. He just passed away about a week ago. Yeah, but this is crazy. Yeah, Tupac's mom passed away this year, too. Too bad she didn't live to see her son be inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Muhammad Ali died this year. Yeah, that's
Muhammad Ali died this year. Zsa Zsa Gabor died the other day. Fuck this death shit, Prince. Like, let's get out of this 2016. Fuck it. We're going to keep on living, man. But as long as we got this music, they going to live on forever, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And as long as y'all can log in, the Murder Master Music Show going to live on forever, too. Because this is episode, 325?
We're actually going to be celebrating our fifth year in April.
We're killing
it. So, five full years, man.
We're killing it.
But I'll tell you what, man. You know, we like to make some trouble. Let's leave them with this. We'll see you guys.
The name describes the background. It describes it well. That's all my
trouble.
Yeah, and I'm like, we got a story to tell. Just like the time. We get the crown. And at the cops don't sing, they drop the kitchen. Nothing happened. Cause I'm a too slick. I'm too black. The black breaker. Put the threat on your life. I'm what you want. Like Freddy Krueger. Lyrics sound like a knife. Daddy Z's a prince of ramen and potatoes. Die. You know what? Boy, it's the visions of my rapping ally. He's ready, ready. The top contender. Of the boys who are trouble. That's right.
I never, 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 never